Is China exporting the surveillance state that it's built up at home? And what does that mean for the future of countries that are buying up this technology? Welcome to Talking China in Eurasia, a new podcast from Radio Free Europe, where we look at how Beijing's rising influence is changing the supercontinent, from the Kazakh steppes to the banks of the Danube. I'm Radio Free Europe correspondent Reed Standish, and joining me today from Belgrade to look deeper at China's role in the Balkans and the spread of Chinese surveillance tech are Stefan Vladislav from the Foundation BFPE and Maya Zivanovic, Radio Free Europe's bureau chief in Belgrade. Maya, Stefan, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so let's get started, guys. So I want to begin today's episode by talking about a recent report we had here at Radio Free Europe about the spread of and potential abuse of Chinese-style surveillance tech in Serbia. But in order to do so, I first need to begin with a story that puts it all in motion. Back in 2014, a young man was killed in a hit and run on a major bridge in Belgrade. The driver fled the scene and later managed to leave the country. After a month on his trail, Serbian authorities learned that he had fled through Turkey and Hong Kong to mainland China. Serbian police shared photos and information with their Chinese counterparts, and thanks to the vast surveillance state that Beijing's built up at home, they were able to catch him in only 3 days. This left its mark in the minds of Serbian officials and impressed them so much that it would go on to sign a strategic agreement with the Chinese tech giant Huawei in 2017 for thousands of surveillance cameras with facial recognition capabilities as part of what the Chinese call a safe city project. But as the government began to place cameras around the city, activists started to push back and launched a legal challenge over the government's right to use facial recognition technology. Due to this years-long battle, facial recognition technology is still legal in Serbia, but it's become the source of a deepening political fault line in the country, and there have been accusations that the government has deployed it illegally to target protesters, most recently during nationwide demonstrations in late 2021. We recently published an investigation looking into this, where we didn't find any evidence that facial recognition was used, but we did document a police operation to surveil, catalog, and intimidate protesters that involved other forms of Chinese surveillance tools, and it also raises a lot of worrying questions and perhaps conclusions about how this Chinese tech that Serbia has purchased could be used in the future. So Maya, I want to open things up and start talking with you. So let's rewind a little bit. I know I've just given this explanation here, but explain to people, what is the state of politics in Serbia these days? And why might activists be concerned about the government having tools like facial recognition available to them?
Thanks, Reed. So thank you for this, for organizing everything. And hi to all the folks here from Belgrade. So I would not start like from the ancient history, but from this day. So today, Serbian president actually met with the deputy minister of the International Department of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China. And they discussed relations between Belgrade and Beijing. And Serbian president actually said that they are entering a new phase of development, and he mentioned, of course, the plans for economic cooperation, improvement of trade exchange, and influx of new Chinese investments. But one really interesting thing is that he actually praised China president and his idea, saying that his words have a special weight and special importance for Serbia because, as he said, Serbia is supporting China and its policy, but then again, China is supporting Serbian politics, especially when it comes to its former province, Kosovo. So then back to the history, Kosovo declared independence in 2008, and Serbian officials and politicians are refusing to recognize Kosovo as a state, and they have support from China also. So main supporters are Russia and China when it comes to blocking Kosovo joining main international institutions. So this is main reason when it comes to Serbia and China, why Serbian politicians are praising China in every statement they give to media. And of course, then it's cheap loans, investments that are coming from China in Serbia, which have special problematic itself, but and issues following, especially when it comes to human rights. But yeah, this is when it comes to politicians from Serbia and China. But when it comes to surveillance and cameras, main event actually happened in 2019 when they officially, Serbian politicians said that they will install Huawei face recognition cameras all over the cities in Serbia, especially capital Belgrade and Novi Sad in the north of the state and Niš in the southern part of Serbia. So cameras are supposed to be part of the project, which is actually launched by Chinese government and is based on widespread use of biometric surveillance and massive gathering of personal data of citizens. And basically, they install the cameras, but in reply to our request in 2020, the Ministry of Internal Affairs said that cameras are still not operating. And we can speak in details about that later, because they already have like legal issues to apply human rights standards when it comes to those cameras.
Right. So, and thanks, Maya. I think that helps a lot. And then I think maybe just also for people who aren't familiar with the Balkans, I mean, what is the Serbian political system? Like, I mean, is Serbia classified as a democracy right now? You know, obviously the president is Aleksandar Vučić. I mean, who is he? And, you know, what is the way that he's running the country? What might that tell us about, you know, the future of using, you know, tools like this facial recognition stuff that we're discussing?
Yeah, so when it comes to Serbian President Vučić and his ruling Progressive Party, they hold all the power in the country. They run main institutions. They're running main institutions. They have split power with their partner, minor socialist party, but actually Serbian president is the one who decides about everything. And of course, people actually trust him, which is showed during the last elections. So they won like a majority again. So they are on power since 2012, yeah. And but one important thing, I think it will be interesting for people here to know. I read a survey from agency Demostat actually, and it said that when it comes to world leaders, Russian president enjoys biggest support here in Serbia among 45%, but then on the second place is China president with 12%. And then on the third place, there is French president Macron. So it tells actually everything.
Okay, thanks, man. I think that gives a good snapshot about where we're at right now. So Stefan, I want to turn this over to you right now. I mean, obviously, you know, Chinese surveillance tools, I think that a lot of this is getting a lot of press. It has been in the last few years. There's been bans in, you know, countries in the United States, whether that's about 5G or using, you know, surveillance. We just saw this happen in the United Kingdom. So tell us a bit more about, you know, these tools and why does China export this type of technology? And, you know, I'm curious if you can just, you know, tell people about what's the controversy around it, you know, in Serbia, but also elsewhere.
Yeah, it's a million-dollar question, actually. Why China does anything? And the simple answer would be, well, because China wants to do it, and because it is in Chinese interest to do things like this across the world. But actually, and I really have to highlight a couple of things here, especially regarding Huawei as a company, and then Serbian position towards China, which is not something new for us China watchers for some. Longer period of time, let's say more than a decade, but recently it has gained a lot of traction in the international community, especially with the outbreak of the COVID-19. So, 2 cents on Huawei. First and foremost, what is important to know is that Huawei's presence in Serbia stretches far wider than only surveillance. Huawei has been a strategic partner of our Ministry of Interior, among other ministries, including Ministry of Telecommunication. It has been partner in installation of broadband infrastructure for widespread internet network in rural areas in Serbia with the state-owned telecommunication company named Telekom, which will be important a little bit later in the conversation. And also there, in addition to the Safe City project, there have been announcements that there is a possibility of Smart City project as well. So naturally, when you have a presence on that scale, the first thing that you point out is the connection between Huawei and the Chinese government. And the second one is question about the export of so-called tech authoritarianism. So whether China wants to provide tools to other regimes across the world to use similar techniques that are quite familiar to the China watchers, big data collection, social credit system, repression of the minorities maybe, or people that are anti-government. So that is a question whether that is a Chinese goal to provide the tool for the regimes across the world. And that brings me to Serbia and to Serbia's position towards China. To add on what Maya already said, so Serbia in theory classifies as a hybrid regime. While there are democratic practices, there are tendencies to have a centralized power, to not really respect the division of authority among parliament and government and president. Literally, the role of the president in Serbian political system should be symbolical, and the fact that pretty much everyone who knows anything about Serbia first knows about Vučić and then about anyone else, shows us what is the perception and what is the real trajectory of the political power in Serbia. And Serbia classifies itself as a country that aspires to become part of the European Union, which in practice doesn't always fly as something that is confirmed by the decisions and some of the steps that our government has taken. But it had never escaped from partnership with the Eastern countries, first and foremost Russia, and more recently China. But to get to the point in this part, and we have to understand that many of the Chinese-backed projects in Serbia, including the surveillance fund, as you mentioned in your introduction, are actually demand-driven. It is not that someone made Serbia to purchase a safe city solution from Huawei. It is that Serbia asked for it. The main question is, with what purpose do we see a question of potential endangerment of the privacy of the citizens? Do we have a tool for the further centralization of power? Do we have a tool that will pretty much forbid or demolish any possibility of the non-violent protests from the democratic opposition? So those are the old questions. And my final point would be that, unfortunately, or not unfortunately, but basically the conversation in Serbia went the other way. No one is actually talking about the fact that the technology came from China. A lot of people are talking about the fact that there are surveillance cameras across Belgrade with facial recognition software, but discussion moved from the question of geopolitical and every other international aspect to the question of endangerment to the privacy, data storage, who will use it in which way, with which goal, and that is something that civil society organizations in Serbia fought for a long period of time in order to clear it up a little bit. They were successful up to a certain point, but the lack of transparency from the Ministry of Interior and Huawei on the other side are still keeping a lot of questions unanswered, and we are trying to understand as best as we can what are the potential consequences of the technologies like that in Serbia. But the fact that we are lacking a lot of information is making our job a lot tougher than we want it to be.
Right. Okay, so this is a reminder to everyone listening. So if you do have questions, those of us listening to us live, you can raise your hand and we'll come to you shortly. I'm just going to go around the horn with Stefan and Maya one more time. So Stefan, I mean, you're laying out, where things stand with surveillance tech and some of these big issues. But, maybe just to give everyone a quick refresher here, I mean, how deep do these ties between, China and Serbia actually go? Obviously, Maya was talking a bit about this at the beginning, but can you give us, the quick, couple minute crash course to bring everyone up to speed?
Well, in the official terms, we can call it comprehensive strategic partnership. I believe that that is the diplomatic level of partnership between two countries. But what it encompasses both economic and political aspects of cooperation. The premise of all cooperation can be traced back to 2009, an international agreement signed between two countries. International agreement which enabled a lot of those famous Belt and Road type infrastructural projects in Serbia. So to put it mildly, Serbia took around 8 billion worth of loans from China over the past decade or so. And we have, because of those loans, we have some of the new highways and railroads in Serbia, which have been promoted as a way of the Chinese development power, basically that China has enabled the infrastructural development in Serbia, which is quite in line with the official Chinese narratives. In addition to the loan agreements, there is a rising level of foreign direct investment, which, not to go too much into the deep, have been followed by a lot of controversies, especially regarding respect of the normative framework and standards of Republic of Serbia, first and foremost in the field of environmental protection, but then a lot of issues regarding labor rights as well. And finally, and it is important to understand that China has not actually been that visible, and China has not been as popular actor for a long period of time in Serbia, but all of that changed in 2020 with the outbreak of the COVID-19. China pretty much became a household name, and Xi Jinping became one of the most important foreign politicians in Serbia, if not the most popular foreign politicians in Serbia. The mask diplomacy towards the vaccine diplomacy have been really well accepted by the Serbian public, heavily facilitated by the Serbian government, and have become a main talking point when we are talking about the Chinese presence in Serbia. Even the president and other officials, even today, are still highlighting that China helped Serbia during the times of crisis. In addition to all of that, political cooperation has been developing on par with the economic cooperation, alignment with the Kosovo issue, which Maya has already mentioned, also Serbian position towards the One China policy, but some quite controversial statements by the high-level officials from Serbia regarding the support of, I'm quoting this, anti-terrorist efforts in the Xinjiang province by the Chinese government. And to add on all of that, we are now seeing more and more influence in the cultural sphere. If any of you visit Belgrade anytime, and I was lucky enough to be able to take Reed there when he was visiting Belgrade recently, you could see a spaceship, not a spaceship, but it looks like a spaceship, a building of the Chinese Cultural Center in the place of the old Chinese embassy destroyed in the NATO bombing of Belgrade in 1999. So to circle back to that comprehensive strategic partnership, I have not even mentioned the cooperation in security sphere, defense sector, trade exchanges, but that is probably another 45 minutes only about that. So I will stop here and be happy to dig deep into the Q&A part of the conversation.
Sure, without any problem. Thanks a lot, Stefan. I appreciate it. Okay, looks like we have our first question here from Clinton. Clinton, I see you have your hand up. So let's see, ask away. The floor is yours.
Hi, thanks for allowing me to come into your space. Clinton DeVoe, a contributor to the City News Radio Network in Canada, as well as the Hill Times, Troy Media, and some other media folks here in Canada. Fascinating conversation. I have a question and a comment for your panelists, as well as for you as the host. I guess some of my biggest worries about what we've seen just in recent weeks, here in what's happening in China, and then in relation to the Balkans. Number one, I think that technology, setting aside surveillance tools themselves, but the actual technology itself, I'm worried about. From, let's use the cloud as an example. In the old days, there was a lengthy process that was involved with transferring and moving surveillance footage, surveillance data, so that you knew that the appropriate people had access to it. There was a paper trail that you could track. The thing I'm concerned about today is everything is in the cloud. So basically, anybody can have full access to it with simply someone passing on a password to a file, either over the telephone or through a text message or, you know, an email or whatever. And suddenly that opens up a whole can of worms. So I think the cloud is problematic when it comes to many of these surveillance tools. And I'm also, so that's, I'd like to ask your panelists about that. And the second thing that I think is worrisome is just how quickly some Western-based corporations, that I would argue that have essentially sold themselves out. So there are multiple reports that have come out in recent days that Apple disengaged its AirDrop feature, allows people to share photographs and video footage and things like that amongst Apple phones that are within a certain geographical distance of one another. And those features were turned off. Obviously, that was clearly done to mitigate and minimize the disruptions that we saw happening here in China.
Right. It's a very common form of protest inside China because of how restricted everything is. That's a way to pass around, you know, digital political leaflets and different things like that. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to clarify that for everybody listening. I think I know where you're going with that second question. And if it's okay with you, Clinton, for me to jump in, I can offer a few comments on both those questions for you. And then maybe I'll turn it over to see if Maya and Stefan want to jump in. I mean, on the data protection thing, you know, I can talk about, you know, my recent experiences reporting in Serbia and in the Balkans. I mean, that's sort of at heart of this issue of facial recognition inside in Serbia right now is this issue of how do you actually protect the data and how do you make sure that only people who, you know, want to use this facial recognition to say, you know, go after a criminal or perhaps if there's a terrorist or, you know, Interpol has a red notice out for somebody. How do you make sure that police are only able to access, you know, all of the data on, say, somebody who is a criminal versus, say, somebody who is a political dissident or a critic of the government, right? And that's really what is being, you know, where this tension is right now in Serbia. And I think that this is a similar thing that's facing a lot of countries. You know, and on the Western corporation front, I mean, I think that that's a, you know, been at heart, actually, you know, as much as we talk a lot about, you know, how China is exporting this technology, you know, a lot of its roots are actually from Western technology. And a lot of Western firms are the ones who invested in it and built this up in China in the first place. And I think that that's part of the conversation that does get glossed over a lot, especially when we're in this very geopolitically charged era right now. So those are sort of my comments on it. I mean, obviously, corporations care a lot about the Chinese market. We've seen this has been an ongoing trend for a long time, and I can't imagine it's going to stop now. But it will be interesting to see, especially as, you know, these protests that are underway in China right now really puts that back into the spotlight. And I'm wondering if we're going to see, you know, corporations respond to pressure, especially public pressure, especially when it hurts them financially. So be curious to see how they respond to all of that. But yeah, I don't know. Maya, do you have a question, a comment about, you know, this issue of data protection? Obviously, you know, in Serbia, Clinton, one thing you might find that's interesting about this is, you know, because essentially the government bought these surveillance cameras that have facial recognition technology, but then after buying them realized they didn't have a legal right to use it properly. And then they established this role, which is called the Commissioner of, you know, Personal Privacy and Data Protection. And he's supposed to be this kind of government intermediary between the people and the Interior Ministry to try to find out a legal compromise. And so far, it's a pretty difficult job, and it doesn't seem like there is one. But Maya, can you talk a little bit about that and explain to people, you know, this conversation and back and forth that's happening inside Serbia right now?
Yeah, sure. Clinton, thank you very much for your question. Stefan also mentioned this, but I want to add, he mentioned that the main telecommunication company here in Serbia has contract with Huawei. So this is what it means when you live in Serbia. So you have contract with the biggest state-owned company and you want to buy a phone. And you have discounts on Huawei phones only. You can buy Apple, you can buy other brands, but you get Huawei phones really cheap. So then you have majority of population carrying around Huawei phones. So another concern is whether Serbia shares some of the data collected with China. This is not mentioned here. I think it deserves a special attention. And yes, Reid, you mentioned that Serbia tried to push a law which would allow Serbian authorities to actually put on cameras that are already installed in the capital city. But like activists and media alarmed everyone with the help of international community, with people from the EU also. And actually, the whole law is now on hold. And we do expect to see it again on the parliamentary agenda. And we do expect them to try to push again. But until then, we have the commissioner who's actually being really helpful and communicating with media. Serbian Interior Ministry is not actually good in communicating with media. So basically, the commissioner is right now trying to give us assessments about the risks and about whether Serbia should push this law, whether it is a good thing or it's not a good thing for Serbia to have face recognition camera. And so far, he's doing a good job.
All right. Thanks, Maya. Clinton, I see you put your hand up again. I'm just going to turn it over to Stefan because I know that he wanted to add something. And before I do that, just a reminder to anyone else listening, if you have a question, you can raise your hand and we'll go over to you. Okay. So, Stefan, you have the floor. And Clinton, I'll ask you when Stefan's on talking.
Yeah, two really brief points. The first one being regarding cloud and the potential of misuse regarding cloud. Look, since we are utilizing technology, there has always been a way how you can misuse that technology. The problem that we are now encountering is, for me, actually the problem of trust and the lack of trust in the democratic institutions and democratic governments. As a country that has, you know, questionable level of democracy, but not, you know, not a unique case, there is an inherited lack of trust that those institutions, in this case, for example, Ministry of Interior, will actually be the one protecting you of the potential misusage of technology or some disadvantages that the technology can bring with it, for example, backdoors, if you want to go, you know, in that direction. And we just do not trust enough that institutions will be on our side and not working in their own interest to some political party or even foreign actors. So thank you, Quinn, for pointing this out. But again, for me, this is we should not be that afraid of embracing new technologies, which I understand is a point, is a clear point. But and I don't have a magic, you know, I don't have a magic wand. But I would like to figure out how we can rebuild that trust into institutions. And just a small point on the Western companies. I would add that even worst case scenario is when you have companies in cooperation with countries or governments doing similar things. We had recently the first visit of Olaf Scholz to Beijing, and while there is like a reported, you know, stronger words and criticism pointed towards the Beijing, this is still a fact that he pretty much went there to find a solution how to continue business as usual regarding, first and foremost, German automotive industry. But even before that, it looks like that he went with a departure gift, being, you know, the purchase of shares of Hamburg port by the Chinese-owned Costco company. So it is not only the problem of corporations, it is also a role that corporation plays in the decision-making process in the Western democracies, because it has obviously been a stepping stone when it comes to distancing of certain countries from the Chinese doing, especially the ones that can be described as wrongdoings, both nationally and on international level.
Thanks a lot, Stefan. Clinton, all right, you have another question you want to ask? You can jump in if you like.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so and for the record, it's not just about the privacy side of things, but there is obviously, and everyone in this panel has touched on it, there's a geoeconomic concerns around some of these surveillance tools, like when, you know, when people are discussing Huawei, for example, and other, whether it's facial recognition or what have you. Just imagine you're a business owner and you're going to meet with a potential client. Before you know it, you that is based in Beijing or Wuhan, or and suddenly they know exactly who you've met with, what time, they know the conversation that you've had, and now they can come in and beat you on a economic business case where they present, you know, a margin advantage, a volume advantage, a sales advantage, whatever it is. And it's purely done through the surveillance tactics, which over time can completely weaken or perhaps destroy a country's economic ability to manufacture and export goods and things of that nature. So it's not just about security, policing, intelligence gathering, but it's there's also a component of
right, the economic side, if I can jump in, right? You're kind of raising, you know, how does this, you know, does this lead to different backdoors? And especially if you're a business, if you're a strategic business, what are the kind of risks that could really affect you on? And I think especially, yeah, you know, for, I think when we're talking about China, I think, you know, given the role that, you know, its economy is very much central to its foreign policy. So those can't really be, you know, untwined. They're very much two things together. So I don't know. I mean, Maya, Stefan, do you have guys have anything you want to jump in on Quentin's questions about if there's, you know, back doors or different things like that? I mean, especially in the Serbia case. I mean, obviously this is part of the equation too of, you know, who, you know, we know that there are things that this has happened with other Chinese companies. I think there was a big scandal in Germany about you know, access to different DNA and stuff like that. But Maya, do you want to go in?
Yeah, so let's say we are all here journalists living in Serbia and you have a meeting with your source and tomorrow you read about it in some of the state-sponsored tabloids. So it's happening. So not just economical consequences, it means like security for journalists also, for sources, for, you know, every aspect of communications.
Right, that leads to a lot of, I think, probably pretty worrying implications too. Stefan, did you want to throw in anything there?
I mean, look, the fact is that it is quite concerning. I mean, I'm putting it mildly. The fact that there is a lot of unknown details about how it happened from the technical side of things, but why there was no consideration of buying any other technology in Serbian case, that we obviously have evidences that is already being used and that government is not admitting that it is being used, and the fact that we don't have a framework, it is all heavily, heavily concerning. But unfortunately, what the point that we are missing here, I'm putting it on the table as a conversation piece, is that it is not going anywhere. And in Serbian case especially. And the fact that we now have to live with it brings us to the conversation, what can we do actually about it? How can we put it under control? How can we monitor it? And that is where people like Maya, especially a journalist, and people who are doing this on the deeper investigative level come into the play. Because if you don't have educated and you don't have, for example, political opposition, investigative journalism is the first branch of defense when it comes to those sort of things. But this is actually leading me to the question that I actually wanted to pose to Maya, because I already mentioned a couple of times the issue of transparency. And I would just like to ask her, Although we just met here or in the online sphere for the first time for the conversation this long, I'm quite a fan of work of her outlet and her previous outlet as well. So how is it when you're trying to dig deep into pieces like this, conversations like this, details like this, and you basically have no one to talk to, except you know someone from on your personal level, or if you have some private contacts within government, or even, you know, some secret sources that no one should even know about it, that they exist. So how is it, especially when we are dealing with the Chinese issue in Serbia, Chinese question in Serbia too, to be, how you don't lose your courage and your persistency when you are pretty much hitting the wall when it comes to the availability of information in cases like this?
Thanks, Stefan. So basically, when you're a journalist in Serbia, you have to have a lot of patience. It's a lot of, you know, talking with the sources and regularly following public databases for everything that you can find open source. And then eventually you end up filing FOIA requests, waiting for 15 or 40 days allowed by the law. And then you get a bunch of papers, and 80% of them are actually blacked, so you can't read anything. Authorities are censoring majority of information and saying it's basically a state secret, because if they would provide us with information, they would jeopardize national security, especially when it comes to deals with China. I have to say with Russia also. So basically, Serbia is obliged to protect investments and to keep key information as secret. So it's really difficult, and you have to bypass in most creative way, respecting the professionalism and ethics. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Really have to be creative. And basically, we often call you, Stefan, to be someone who's quoted in our articles, and I would use this opportunity to thank you.
Yeah, that's my true. I have to echo that one, Stefan. I mean, I think maybe you're one of two very notable China experts in Serbia, and I think probably the Balkans at large, or maybe three, I should say. But yeah, so thank you.
Oh, thank you, guys.
but I have a question for Stefan, just like
go ahead.
Bring the ball back in his yard. Like, I'm interested, like, where do you see this? To go back on these cameras, because the answer to this question will answer where do you see Serbia, let's say, in 5 years. So do you see cameras still being there and operational in 5 years, considering that Serbia wants to join the EU? The EU is saying that Serbia has to align its foreign policy. So basically, in 5 years, do you see cameras being operational, doing face recognition job, and used by the Serbian police?
Well, okay, so a little bit of a foresight exercise to finish on. Let me put it in bullets. First, unfortunately, I don't see Serbia becoming part of European Union in 5 years, which is quite unlucky thing for us, but I'm not that optimistic based on many reasons, not only based on the Chinese presence here. But when it comes to the usage of the Chinese technologies, and more specifically usage of the Chinese surveillance cameras, even if Serbia over the night decides to align its policies with the EU standards, there is no specific EU standards that is forbidding usage of the Chinese technologies in basically any way, but especially when it comes to the surveillance, that doesn't fall even within the 5G category, which has been quite controversial when it comes to the Huawei's presence across the Europe. The second thing is when it comes to the national level and the decisions, I'm not seeing Serbia or Belgrade or Ministry of Interior taking down those cameras. So approximately there are some instances that there is around 2,000 surveillance cameras by Huawei right now, but that they are not fully operational, and I don't see them being taken down. But I do see and hope that we will get that legislative framework which will put it under certain level of control, and that we will have independent monitoring of usage of those cameras, with the sole reason to basically not allow any misusages, endangerment of the privacy, or even you know, the misusage by the third actor, in this case, for example, Chinese government. So I would not pretty much I would not give a definitive answer, but I would say that I probably see them where they are today. I probably see them in the 5 years as well.
Okay, thanks a lot, Stefan. So unfortunately, we're running low on time, and we're going to have to end things there. A big thanks to everyone for tuning in. This has been Talking China and Eurasia, a new podcast from Radio Free Europe. I want to thank my two guests today, Maya Zivanovich and Stefan Vladisev, for joining me today. And as I mentioned at the start, this live conversation is also published as a podcast, and it's available on Radio Free Europe's website. You can also subscribe to Talking China and Eurasia and other Radio Free Europe podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever else you like to listen. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And if you don't already, please subscribe to my China and Eurasia newsletter, which comes out every other Wednesday. Thanks for listening. And until next time, I'm Reed Standish.